We're getting you ready for that and so much more here on NFL Live. Adam Schefter, get us started. What are you paying attention to tonight in Bills Titans?
We've got a game tonight, Buffalo Bills and Tennessee Titans, where the Titans finally will be in action. They haven't played since last month. They still have 9 players on the COVID list, Laura, but they will be playing Buffalo tonight.
I want to see how this team responds. I mean, they're coming off of one of the weirder weeks, 2 weeks in NFL history. I'm not throwing them a pity party. Obviously, they've been criticized a lot, but I'm very curious to see how they look off of this extended bye with missing so many of their starters. This is a tremendous challenge for them.
You know what you do when you can't get to practice and you can't get to the facility? You go back to the basics. And the basics of football has always been hand the damn ball off. Give it to Derrick Henry and let the man open up the can of whooping. Here we go, Tennessee Titans. Backs against the wall. Derrick Henry, it's time to eat tonight, big dog.
I'm excited to watch a bunch of offensive football in America to get to see these two offensive coordinators, Brian Daboll and Arthur Smith, go on display. If you're a person who likes moving parts in your offense, who likes creating space, who likes big ball play action over the top and a ton of fun, tonight is your game. Excited to watch these two play callers go head to head.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to NFL Live. You just heard all of them, Dan, Marcus, Mina, Adam, with you for the next hour. And stay tuned a little later because Marcus is going to tell you a team he thinks should tank for Trevor Lawrence and why. But first, how about the Saints' comeback on Monday Night Football against the Chargers? Dan Orlovsky, let's get right to it. Drew Brees and the Saints hosting the Chargers. And we're going to pick it up in the fourth because it got real interesting. Saints down by 7. Brees gets it to Jared Cook for a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, 3rd and 14, you're thinking, all right, let me just try to find this completion. But Brees does an awesome job with the little things, a climb in the pocket, great protection. This is what he does better than anybody, is move people, and a beautiful, beautiful throw for that touchdown.
Dan will take a deeper dive into that play a little later on in the show. Saints tie it up 20-20 later in the fourth. Saints down by 7 after a Mike Williams touchdown. And Brees finding Kamara there making it happen down the sideline.
Laura, he makes this look easy. Trust me, it's not. I mean, this is grace to get off this defensive end, track the football, get a hand on it, tip it to yourself. I mean, this is incredible athleticism. The balance, 1, 2, 3 feet in bounce by Kamara.
Kamara stepped up when Drew Brees needed him most, and a few plays later, Sean Payton brings in Taysom Hill, a quarterback. You know he's going to run, but it worked.
Yeah, his mind was made up. He got around the 10-yard line and just decided, I'm going to give a little pump fake and get downhill towards that end zone.
Saints tie it up 27 after the extra point, so we're going to overtime. Of course we are on Monday Night Football. 2nd and 5, Saints on the Chargers 35-yard line, and Brees able to get it to Latavius Murray. Bosa was in his face, though.
Outstanding play by both those guys. Murray making that catch, getting out, and then the physicality to finish some runs.
Will Lutz with an opportunity for the field goal to put the Saints ahead. He gets it done 36 yards out. Saints win it in overtime 30-27. And this was Brees' 37th career win after his team trailed in the fourth quarter. According to the Elias Sports Bureau, that's now tied with Tom Brady for the second most in NFL history, trailing only Peyton Manning's 43 such wins. It was also his 13th overtime win. That moves past Brady for the most all time. Yeah, I think he was probably breathing a sigh of relief after all of that as well. But Drew Brees seems to always be bringing it on Monday night. And in recent weeks, a lot of people have talked about his lack of arm strength. We've talked about it on this show here. He's still on a team that's averaging over 30 points per game. So What is Sean Payton doing to put him in good position?
I'd say the biggest thing is he's aware of where Drew Brees is right now as a player. And he's kind of scheming things up to make it certainly a little bit easier on him. And then we all forgot, like, Drew Brees does little things really better than anybody. Single high safety in the middle of the field. Naturally, you want to work outside the perimeter, but they put Emmanuel Sanders on the inside. And then he's just going to run a normal stop route. Now, normally, if he's outside, this is a really difficult throw. Got to have arm strength. It's not needed because they put him in the slot. Really good coaching by Sean Payton. Now the 3rd and 14. This is called man-to-man coverage, double robber. Those guys are going to play just at the sticks. Now Jared Cook's going to have this crossing steam. Drew Brees knows, I just have to peek at that backside defender for a second. Hold him there to vacate the top left corner of the screen, which is the void. And then hold that free safety in the middle field. And when I want him to move, commit. Look at him. He is staring completely to the right. That gets that safety to move for just a second. You bring the single receiver on the shallow cross, and you vacate that void in the defense. You create that space by Sean Payton of singling out that receiver, getting him out of there. And then the little things by Drew. We could talk about the arm strength all we want. That's fair. But he still does the little things when it comes to moving and manipulating coverage better than anybody. They still have Sean Payton. They still have Drew Brees, and that's why they're going to be in this till the end.
All right, so the offense might be okay, or at least seemingly decent enough, but it seems like this is the theme of the entire year so far, Mina. The defense has concerns. What are your concerns about the Saints' D?
You know, what's so frustrating, Laura, is that it changes every week. And that's why I think the Saints defense has been more disappointing to me than the offense, which, you know, despite the absence of Michael Thomas, put up points, because this was supposed to be a great defense. And yesterday, last night, the pass rush brought it. I think they had their best game of the season. Getting Marcus Davenport back helps. My boy Trey Hendrickson got 1.5 sacks. But the coverage continues to not hold up their end of the bargain. And again, it's a different player every week. This particular game, Malcolm Jenkins played great aside from the dropped pick. But Marshon Lattimore struggled in the first half, and then poor Patrick Robinson. That's just, you know, his comeback was not the best. And it's just hard to diagnose because the blame keeps moving around. It's a complete effort that's lacking, and they're just playing so far below their talent level right now. That's what's so frustrating.
Okay, so hear me out. They got to stop starting slow because, like I said before when we talked about the New Orleans Saints, the goal was not to win a lot of games or just make the playoffs. The goal was to win a Super Bowl. And when I compare them to the top-tier teams, give Aaron Rodgers a 14-point lead. Give Russell Wilson a 14 or a 20-point lead or a 17-point lead. Watch what happened the rest of the way. Drew Brees in this offense is playing really, really well. They're making up for some of the things that they're lacking on the back end that you just talked about, Mina. But I do not see the Saints being a Super Bowl caliber football team starting out slow. They were down to Detroit, had to come back and win. Down to the Chargers, obviously, we saw how that played out to the end of the game. Even with the Chargers having a chance to win the game late because the secondary gave up another play. I have no qualms about Drew Brees, his arm strength. We done all been through that. Whether the offense can have success, him and Sean Payton been doing this long enough. They better stop starting slow if they plan on winning the Super Bowl.
Of course, on the other side of things, guys, I mean, all night long, we were all like, man, Justin Herbert's really good. How did we not see this one coming? And he threw for 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. The Saints also agreed with us. They had some high praise for the rookie quarterback.
Listen, he's a good young talent. You can see you don't feel like you're playing against a young player. You know, he's someone that gets the ball out of his hands. You know, I think he's got a promising future, and he's impressive to watch.
That's all. I was really impressed with him. I've heard many great things about him from others, too. So he's one of those guys who has a bright future in this league, as do many of the young QBs that we see playing every Sunday. He's got a very bright future and obviously great for that organization.
He made a lot of great plays down the stretch, and that's something, you know, that he may be a force to be reckoned with for the years to come. He's showing some huge potential.
Yeah, of course, making his Monday Night Football debut, and this the week that Anthony Lynn had officially named him the starter for the future. Let's get Shefty back in here. And Adam, some people have been surprised by Herbert's high level of play here in the first 4 games, but the Chargers have been high on him throughout the draft process, right?
Well, a few things to keep in mind here, Laura. Number one, he's impressed them from day one, not only on the field, but off the field. Even though he's quiet and soft-spoken, the people around him in that organization believe he's been like a leader to that team, even at a young age, even as a rookie. And when we go back to the draft, as you're saying, absolutely, they had a slightly higher grade on Justin Herbert than they did at Tua. Now, at that point in time, some people liked Tua, some people liked Herbert. The two were fairly interchangeable. The Chargers happened to like both quarterbacks an awful lot, had high grades on both. But I think given the choice, even though Tua went right before them, I think they preferred Herbert just a wee bit more than Tua. So it worked out well for Miami, and it worked out especially well for the Chargers, who drafted Herbert, who's been very impressive so far.
Yeah, Tua at pick number 5 and Herbert at pick number 6. Mina, you watched Justin Herbert a ton in college, being a Pac-12 person that you are. How did so many teams miss on him, and maybe so many of us that didn't think he would quite be at this level this early on?
Yeah, this is live, so we can't Photoshop, but I should be holding an L right now because I missed out on Justin Herbert, and I've been wondering why, thinking through it. I think I underestimated how hamstrung he was by that Oregon offense, Laura, both the scheme and some of the skill players he was working with. But I also just didn't see this level of aggression coming from him. The attacking mentality he has shown in these games, that's a credit to him. His mentality, his preparation, but also to the coaching in Los Angeles. They got to Pep Hamilton, the quarterback's coach, on the sideline last night. That is a name we should be hearing a lot when we start talking about coaching jobs, because he did a spectacular job in the XFL, and he's clearly doing a great job with Justin Herbert, too.
Yeah, it's a good point. And when it goes back to Oregon, you know, Mario Cristobal and that offense, very O-line driven, very much about running the ball and sort of a ground and pound offense. So that matters when you think about Herbert in college. You've got some news, Shefty, for us about the Saints' next home game. What is that?
Laura, what's happening today is Saints officials are meeting with officials at LSU about moving the Saints games to Baton Rouge. The Saints have been playing in the Superdome. The mayor of New Orleans obviously is not allowing fans along with other people to attend those games. And I think the Saints want some fans to be in attendance, and that's why they're meeting today with officials in Baton Rouge about moving games to Tiger Stadium, so that they could have some fans in attendance. Now, there's a debate about whether it's safe to have any fans. Today we saw the Philadelphia Eagles allow fans back into their stadium this week for the first time, I think 7,500 fans. The Saints want a certain amount of fans in attendance. The city is balking at that, and so there's a little dispute going on, and in the interim, the Saints are preparing as if they could move to Tiger Stadium to play their games on the campus of LSU.
It's fascinating. A Death Valley with the Saints in action. They might have a better chance of winning than LSU right now. LSU heading to Gainesville this weekend, by the way. The Falcons are winless in 2020. That means they fired head coach Dan Quinn and GM Thomas Dimitroff. Now, some have wondered about the future of quarterback Matt Ryan. He'll obviously have a new head coach and GM no matter what. So here's what owner Arthur Blank said about Ryan's future in Atlanta when he was asked about it today.
I love Matt, much like I love, you know, Dan. I love Thomas. Matt's been a, you know, franchise leader for us, a great quarterback. I hope he's going to be part of our plans going forward, but that'll be a decision that I won't make. Matt has the ability to play at a very high level, even at this age. Whether that's going to continue or not, I'm not sure. I appreciate his willingness to consider doing that and the level of what he's played for us for 13 years, which has been incredible. I will have to see. But then again, that's going to be a decision at the end of the day. That'll be part of it be up to the player and part of it be up to the coaching staff.
All right. So what sticks out to you there is Arthur Blank didn't say, well, yeah, Matt Ryan is our quarterback for the future. So, Dan, should the Falcons be building long term around their 35-year-old quarterback?
If they get a pick that's outside the top six or seven of the NFL draft, yes. Now, if they fall in the top three or four of this pick or this draft, then it's time to rebuild and move on. And that's why this is a fascinating situation, because they need a general manager and they need a head coach. Now, they should wait till realizing where they are in the draft slot to determine who should be their next head coach. Because, again, like, you don't want to bring in a head coach and then all of a sudden you have the second pick of the draft, but that head coach really wants to have Matt Ryan as his quarterback. Because the three quarterbacks coming out this year, Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, and Trey Lance, like, they're going to be three of the top five picks. But if you have a seventh or eighth pick in the draft and the head coach wants to rebuild, well, you're not going to do that. And so I think you got to wait to figure out where you are in the draft slot and then figure out if it's full rebuild mode, unload Julio, all that stuff, or can we get a veteran head coach in there that's ready to build a little bit more about around Matt Ryan, because there's still some young talent on that football team.
I am sure that Falcons fans would love to have Trevor Lawrence, Dan, or Justin Fields, but doing so, either trading Ryan now or offloading him at the end of the season, would cost them over $40 million next year. And I realize being in a division with the Saints might make you think the salary cap doesn't exist, but trust me, it does. Now, my friend Bill Barnwell, who's very smart about these things, explained to me if Matt Ryan was cut late next summer, they could spread out the cap hit, but still, it would be a lot of money. My feeling is, unless you can find a trade partner willing to do that, you're better off riding with him, because he's not the problem in Atlanta. I know he hasn't been playing well, but he is so far below that defense, which is 31st in yards per play, and the coaching. Every Sunday, I am screaming at my television, stop running the ball on first and second down, okay? Let's see some creativity. I think some changes in coaching could help Matt Ryan and keep the core together.
Yeah, Mina really is screaming at her TV exactly
stop.
Like that. Adam, if they continue to lose, Trevor Lawrence's name will continue to be brought up. Will the Falcons take him if they do get that number one pick?
Well, Laura, let's make it very simple. Whoever has the first pick in the draft is going to take Trevor Lawrence at number one. Of the winless teams right now, if any of these winless teams finish with the number one pick, and the winless teams right now are the Falcons, the Jets, the Giants. They're taking Trevor Lawrence one. Just about anybody is taking Trevor Lawrence at one. And so it's not much of an issue. Atlanta, think about where Trevor Lawrence is from. Cartersville, a suburb of Atlanta, right there. And so it's a simple decision that the Falcons have the number one overall pick. And we're 5 weeks into the season, going into week six. It's still early. But if Atlanta has the number one pick, turn in the card. It's Trevor Lawrence. It's simple.
Yeah, start making football preparations. When we start talking about, like Adam talking about who has the first pick, Atlanta need to be fighting for that first pick to get Trevor Lawrence. And it's really not an indictment on Matt Ryan. It's about installing some juice into this Falcons organization and franchise. They need a reset. Like, I know that they have good players, but Trevor Lawrence with a healthy Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley with his ability to move like he moves, Atlanta should be tanking for Trevor. We didn't think that we would be having this conversation. Initially, it started with Jacksonville. But if you have a plan to reinvent this organization, and I'm sure whatever new coach you hire, D.O., they gonna want Trevor Lawrence as a quarterback because he offers exactly what we're looking at in this league right now. We just saw Justin Herbert. We just talked about him. We see what Josh Allen is doing. You think they gonna do, you think they not gonna take that over what Matt Ryan can offer? Hell no. Tank for Trevor, Atlanta. Reset the whole thing and get back on the winning track.
I'm not totally disagreeing with you. I would say this, like if you're Arthur Blank and you're kind of trending toward that thought process, then that should be something that you're moving on this year. There's going to be a couple teams this year that you can call and go, I want to move on from Matt Ryan right now. One, you get rid of him contract-wise, and two, you certainly assure your chance of becoming the number one pick.
Guys, one thing I'd point out, too, is not this week, but the following week, we will see the Big Ten get back into action in college football. You see Justin Fields out there, and you just never know. Adam, I see you wanting to get back in. Go ahead.
Yeah, well Dan, I see you having the Falcons auctioning off Matt Ryan. Where do you want to trade him? Where you got a good landing spot for Matt Ryan right now? A team that's going to take on a $40 million contract or whatever it is right now?
Yeah, Shepchi, first, I'm not the numbers guy. That's way over my head. I'd say this. If they're going to move him, call Indianapolis. Call him right now because Indy, if they can get better quarterback play, is a bona fide long-term playoff run this year.
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, you never know what might happen, but Dan's already shipping people off. New on NFL Live right now, this from our Falcons reporter, and we're going to read the tweet here. Oh, Vaughn McClure is his name, and the Falcons have placed rookie defensive lineman Marlon Davidson on the reserve COVID-19 list. So an update from the Falcons. Of course, they take on the Vikings this week.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
You know, Dak carried the torch as the franchise QB in Dallas, as both he and Tony Romo boasted win percentages of over 600. Other QBs over the last 15 seasons haven't fared as well, going 10-23. Those quarterbacks being Kellen Moore, Matt Castle, Brandon Whedon, Kyle Orton, Stephen McGee, John Kitna, Brad Johnson, and Drew Bledsoe. Here's Jerry Jones on where Dallas goes from here.
We've got to be reminded that to have a team, that we've got to really manage how we dole out our resources. Dak is deserving of anything you want to put on a piece of paper, relatively speaking. He's deserving of that.
This injury does not alter your thinking whatsoever about Dak as the face and future quarterback of the Cowboys, correct?
None.
Marcus, let me just reiterate one thing that Jerry Jones just said. Dak is deserving of anything you want to put on a piece of paper. Of course, this said now. That wasn't the case back when they were trying to get the deal done.
Yeah, except the four-year deal. Like, that being on a piece of paper ain't going to get done, obviously. Listen, I don't care, Laura. I don't care what they say. I don't care what anybody says out of Dallas Brass. I don't care if they say he the future or Dak can overcome. We knew all of this before Dak Prescott got injured. We knew Dak Prescott was the leader of the team. We knew that he was a guy that everybody counted on. We knew how successful he was at the quarterback position. I do not give a damn. And what Jared gonna say? No, we ain't gonna sign Dak because he just broke his ankle. Hell no. I've been screaming this from time and time and time when we start having this conversation about this contract with Dak Prescott. If you have a franchise quarterback that you're sold on, a year does not make you not get to a long-term solution, okay? So everybody not kumbaya. Everybody not happy and everybody want to bring Dak in and how great of a guy he is and his neighbors sending him messages and all of this type of stuff that's coming on the radio and in the media and everybody sending their condolences and all of that, and rightfully so. There was a time that Dallas could have paid Dak and made him their long-term quarterback. Just recently, before this season started, i.e., he's playing under a franchise tag. The guys that he was drafted with, he has a better resume. And he has more wins, but he is the one playing under a franchise tag. Not everybody nice. And everybody want to tell Dak, oh, man, I can't wait till you get healthy because we're going to give you all that money. Well, why y'all ain't do that before? Everything everybody's saying now, they knew then.
So it is Andy Dalton's team now. What are your expectations with him at the helm?
I expect Andy Dalton to be a straight beast at this position. Look, Andy Dalton is a good football player, good quarterback, surrounded by a lot of talent, all right? That's a great situation for him. I don't expect Dallas to win the division with Andy Dalton. I thought they could with Dak Prescott, though. This will bode well. Look, Andy Dalton's a backup. He's playing with house money. You walk in, somebody say, hey, you got $100,000 on the table. It ain't yours. You ain't have to work for it. It's ours. We just decided to give it to you. Go out there and do what you will. That's the position Andy Dalton in. He can't lose. They already were doing bad. He can't lose.
Yeah, well, 78% of the Cowboys' total yards have come via the pass, so he may have to throw it a lot. That's the highest rate in the NFL. It is not going to be easy to move on from Dak. Good reminder that you can catch more from the Cowboys as they go head-to-head with Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins and the Arizona Cardinals in our Week 6 Monday Night Football matchup, 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. As always, our coverage begins with Monday Night Countdown at 6. Hey, a group of more than 80 reporters and editors helped assemble ESPN.com's Week 6 power rankings. As you can see here, the best in the NFL. We've got a new team on top, the Seattle Seahawks, followed by the Packers, Chiefs, Ravens, and Bills. Of course, the Chiefs coming off their first loss this season, who we'll see in action later tonight would be the Bills. So, Mina, there's a trend for these top teams in these rankings. What is it?
Well, first, I'd like to say I didn't make the list before anyone accuses me of putting Seattle at number one. Laura, they are all great offenses, and they have a number of things in common. But one thing that Orlovsky and I text about all the time, we're kind of obsessed with, is the use of pre-snap motion. Totally normal thing, you know. These teams use it amongst the highest rates in the league, and you saw there that graphic. When teams do use pre-snap motion, they're more efficient on offense for a number of reasons. You can get a numbers advantage. Watch any Ravens run, and you'll see that. You confuse defensive backs. You can mess with their run fits, their leverage. You can diagnose what they're going to do before the snap. They'll have to tell you what sort of coverage they're in. I mean, it's a cheat code, basically, for offenses. And as Dan's about to show you, if you're not using it, I don't know what you're doing in 2020.
Yeah, I think if you're not using it, you're hurting your football team. And it's not only just the motion, Mina, right? It's like motion and snap at the same time. Yeah. And to your point, like, the things that it does is you can gain numbers advantage. You can change the strength of your formation at the snap. You change the rules and responsibilities of defenders at the snap, and then you're also giving them a ton of things to look at. So, like, what does it actually look like on tape, and how does it really impact the defense? Well, first of all, we see a ton of man coverage in the NFL, so you can creep, snap, or space, put the ball on the right hash, and then you motion a guy right at the snap, and you get Russell Wilson out on space. That guy's got responsibilities. You created all that space because of the use of motion for that defender to make a decision. All right, well, what about having to change the run fit? Well, that linebacker staring at that horizontal motion at the snap, he's got to keep eyes on number three. Number three is going to the sideline. You create a huge seam in your run game. How about changing responsibilities? That safety can't get down there on this pre-snap motion. He gets out leveraged, and it's a huge gain for the Bills. Robert Woods, there's a single receiver at the bottom of the screen. Now there's two receivers. He flushes out the corner. You don't get hands on him. You got two guys running down the field at one safety who's coming into the screen now because he had vision on that single receiver, but the formation changed right at the snap. I'll say it again. Like, if you're not doing this stuff as an offense, you are slowing down your ability to play well. It's a trend that we're seeing all across the NFL. Watch it tonight. Motion,
yes,
and then the snap happening at the same time. I promise you, tonight, that'll happen 70 times by both of those football teams.
Yeah, it's interesting. Mina referenced the Ravens. Actually, the Ravens and 49ers using motion on more than 70% of their offensive plays this season, and it's worked quite well, especially for the Ravens at times. New on NFL Live, Adam Schefter, you have some news related to the Chiefs. What can you tell us?
Laura, moments ago, the Kansas City Chiefs placed their fullback, Anthony Sherman, on the reserve COVID-19 list. He becomes another Chiefs player here to basically either test positive or be in proximity to the virus. You remember over the weekend, the Chiefs had an assistant strength and conditioning coach that also tested positive at one point or another. Everybody's been waiting to see if any of the Chiefs would test positive. Anthony Sherman finally has. We also mentioned earlier in the show that 9 Titans players remained on the COVID-19 list, but just moments ago they activated 2 more. Camilla Carrier got activated along with cornerback Christian Fulton, so that now brings the Titans players on the COVID-19 list to 7.
All right, Titans and Bills, of course, in just a couple of hours. Shefty staying with us here with all the latest. Let's get to Baker Mayfield. The Browns off to their best start since 1994, due in part to Baker, who boasts the league's 7th best QBR after ranking 19th in 2019. How, you ask? Well, for one, he's taking advantage of the league's best rushing attack. He has 500 yards, 6 touchdowns, and just 1 pick after such plays. He's also finding success while outside the pocket. 3 such touchdowns on throws trail only Derek Carr and Russell Wilson. Here's Steelers coach Mike Tomlin on Mayfield.
They've got a well-balanced attack. They're possessing the ball. They keep you off balance. They change the launch point. Baker's doing a good job of administering the offense.
All right, so of course the Browns and Steelers facing off, so that's why Tomlin's talking about him. And quarterbacks that Tomlin has previously used that administrator term will include Matt Castle, Andy Dalton, Lamar Jackson, Peyton Manning before a playoff game, and his own quarterback, Big Ben Roethlisberger, in 2015. All right, so anyway, that's just important context. But Marcus, do you agree with him on that assessment?
Yeah, I don't think it's a shot. Baker's a game manager. He's managing the things that Kevin Stefanski wants to do with this offense. This offense is built around a physical offensive line, a run game, and getting ahead and letting their pass rushers up front get after the quarterback and creating turnovers. Like, Baker Mayfield is not going to be the 350-yard passer a game with 3 to 4 touchdowns that everybody thought he was going to be coming out of college in this offense. He is making the plays that are called for him. Kevin Stefanski is doing a tremendous job Instagramming right now. He's hiding all the flaws and using all the right angles to make sure Baker Mayfield looks wonderful in these games. And he's, look, to Baker's credit, right? We talked about coaching. We talked about him suffering from that. Kevin Stefanski has come over and put him in a comfortable situation, moving him around and creating easy throws for him. And he's doing a phenomenal job at it. So he's doing his job.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with being a game manager if you're winning games, right? I mean, last year, Baker took a lot of heat. Some of it deserved. That trench coat was really bad. But a lot of it was not his fault. I mean, he got let down by just about everyone around him. The play calling, the pass protection, his skill players, including OBJ. This year, when he has struggled, because, you know, he's been up and down. I think last week you saw he played a terrific first half and then struggled near the end. Everyone around him is lifting him up. OBJ in particular with that circus catch last week. It reminded me a little bit of what he would do with Eli, which is he was a Band-Aid for him. Because the dark side of a circus catch is that it's usually a bad throw, right? I mean, that's the famous OBJ catch, the one-handed one that sort of launched his career. It was a bad throw. When he is doing that, Baker doesn't have to be perfect. All he has to do is count on the system, the play calling, and the playmakers, and they can win games.
Yeah, Dan, sitting at 4-1 right now, what do you think about this Browns team? Will they make a deep run into the playoffs?
Not unless Baker stops becoming somebody different player-wise in the fourth quarter. I mean, first, second, third quarter, Baker's playing really good football. In the fourth quarter, for some reason, he falls apart. The last 2 weeks, they've asked him to end games throwing the football, and he's been unable to do that. And so this is a really good football team, but to everybody's point, he's got to make plays in the fourth quarter. The ball can't be on the wrong shoulder to Odell Beckham. Hit the fullback. He's wide open in the flat. Don't have to take your shot on first down to the tight end. Get the ball out of your hands and don't turn the football over. That's the case for the last 2 weeks with Baker Mayfield. And listen, again, this is one of the best football teams in the NFL. But Seattle, their quarterback's been a difference maker in the fourth quarter. Green Bay, difference maker. Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, the Rams, Tennessee, New Orleans. All of their quarterbacks have been difference makers this year in a fourth quarter game at some point. Baker hasn't done it. And until he does, they're not a long-term playoff contender this season.
Yeah, it's a good point. The Browns do, though, have the second easiest strength of schedule the rest of the season, according to our Football Power Index.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
After a roller coaster of news about positive COVID tests in the Titans organization, uncertainty, and then games being put on hold, we finally get to see Tennessee back in action in a couple hours. Of course, they are taking on the Bills in Tuesday night football. Two undefeated teams. This one, of course, kicking off at 7 Eastern. Diana Rossini in Nashville and has been covering all of this with the Titans for a while now. Now, listen, it's been 16 days, Diana, since we've seen the Titans play. How is the team feeling about getting back out on that field behind you tonight and getting back in action?
Yeah, Laura, I don't think a lot of people realize that the Titans have only practiced 2 times in those 16 days. One was just a walkthrough. The other was a practice without any pads on. So you can tell and you can probably assume that this team is very concerned about execution. In fact, I texted with a member of this coaching staff about an hour ago and I said, you know, what are you worried about here? And he pointed, execution and conditioning. Obviously, these guys haven't played at game speed. I did speak to a player on this team, and he said that last night, head coach Mike Vrabel's message to the team was effort. We may not go out there and be clean on every single play. There may even be some confusion, but we're going to go out there and we're going to play hard. But meantime, on the other side of the ball, the Buffalo Bills, they've changed nothing, Laura. I talked to a player this morning. He said, we are so focused at making sure we are not overlooking this team because we know they have the benefit of one thing, and that's they've had rest. They've been able to get their guys that have been injured back out on the field, receivers like A.J. Brown, who's back in the starting lineup tonight.
Yeah, you brought up the conditioning. It made me think about cramping, things like that. So I just dialed up the weather on my phone. It's going to be about 70 degrees in Nashville about right now. And then by kickoff down to 62. So at least not super hot there. Thanks so much, Diana Rossini, for joining us on NFL Live with the latest there from Nashville. Adam Schefter with us as well. That was just a quick little switch there. Tell us about some other injuries that we need to know about tonight, starting with Titans offensive tackle Taylor Lewan.
Yeah, he's listed as questionable, Laura. He's going to play tonight. Taylor Lewan will be in the lineup despite that questionable status. He wants to get out there. He wants to play football at this point in time. The Titans are going to want to run the football with Derrick Henry, and Taylor Lewan figures to lead the way despite the fact that he is listed as questionable with that shoulder injury. As for the Bills wide receiver, John Brown, he's dealing right now with a calf injury that he seemed to re-aggravate at practice. Now, the sense has been one of optimism that he'll be out there tonight, but I think they want to see him here in pregame warmups, which are going on as we speak. The actives and inactives doing about 30 minutes. And then Tre'Davious White has been on the field working out, warming up, consulting with Bills trainers about whether he can play with the back injury that he's been listed as. We'll see what they ultimately decide here within the next 30 minutes.
All right, keep an eye on that as we count down to the start of this game, about 2 hours and 6 minutes until that one kicks off on a Tuesday night. Mina, we've heard about all these injuries and everything going on, but the most important name on either roster is who?
Oh, everybody's going to roast me for this one and call me a hipster, but I'm just going to say it. Bills linebacker Matt Milano being out, I think, is huge in this game because this is the play-action bowl. These are the two of the best play-action quarterbacks in football. Ryan Tannehill is first in yards per attempt off of play-action. Josh Allen is first in passer rating and touchdowns. To me, that's the key to this game. Which of these two defenses can stop or at least exert great discipline against the play-action pass? That's going to decide this one.
Mina, that was left field, but I feel you. I totally understand the responsibility of a linebacker, especially when you're talking about play action. But to me, this needs to be a vintage Derrick Henry performance. Right now, Derrick Henry is averaging 3.9 yards a carry. Last year, he was at 5.1. He got a little bit going against Minnesota, scored 2 touchdowns in that game, went for 100. I think this needs to be one of those 30 to 40 carry nights for Derrick Henry, and let Tannehill get the play action going, but also feed the monster out of the backfield. We know that when you have been off, not in the facility, not having the opportunity to get the looks that you get in practice, you go back to football basics. That's big men against big men and see who can win at the line of scrimmage and then hand it off to your 260-pound back and let him bludgeon people. I believe that's what we'll see from Arthur Smith tonight with the Tennessee Titans as opposed to trying to have some super exotic plan. They have made their stance on physically dominating people with that running back without the time to put the work in the practice facility. It's got to be a heavy dose of Derrick Henry tonight.
Yeah, shocker, you're shouting out the big men there, Marcus. Hey, Dan, two coaches could be coaching for their future. Tell us who they are and what you're excited about with that.
Yeah, both play callers tonight will be at the top of the head coaching interview list come this offseason. Arthur Smith and Brian Daboll. Like, if you're a fan of just watching really creative offense, shots downfield, great stuff in the red zone, understanding how motion matters in the NFL, creating space, gaining leverage and opportunities and mismatches for your football team, especially early on, these are two of the best right now. If you're a Jacksonville fan, if you're a Houston fan, if you're a fan of the Falcons, both teams in New York, watch this game tonight because both these guys are going to be on your team's interview lists to become head coaches next year. They're two of the best and most creative play callers in the NFL. There's a reason why both quarterbacks are playing so well. They got weapons galore. But that's Arthur Blank. Check out Arthur Smith tonight. You guys share a same name. Maybe you will share same residency next year.
You got to think that they're paying attention, those Arthurs, to each other. All right, I love the Matt Milano thing, Mina. I do want to ask you about Diana's report. She was mentioning just that the Titans have only had 2 practices. One of them wasn't even really a real practice. How much does that factor in tonight just with their conditioning?
Well, we haven't seen this before. Like I was saying at the top of the show, that's what's so unprecedented about this game, this sort of bye. And to me, I think about teams going into the Super Bowl, actually. The way that you hear them talk about, okay, you know, how do we play like ourselves? How do we not come out flat spending this much time away from the facility? And I think it's going to be challenging, especially with all of the players missing.
I think execution is going to be huge. You know, like, especially early on. The understanding that, okay, if you're the Tennessee Titans, you haven't played a game in over 2 weeks. So what can you do as a coach to understand, let me get my guys settled in? I expect, like Marcus said, heavy dose of their run game. Don't be surprised if there's a ball downfield very early on. One, it's what they love to do. But two, it can loosen you up, especially as a quarterback. I would want that. I would want, give me a shot downfield. Let me just kind of get my feel into this football game with a little bit of adrenaline. But that's something to watch. What team executes better in the first 10 minutes of this game and get settled into the rhythm of the football game.
Yeah, you take a shot downfield, try to get your feet under you. You hope no one from the other team's defense is there to catch it. Okay, got time for one more thing. And Mina, you tweeted this out yesterday. Said Ben Roethlisberger is the Ben Simmons of the NFL this year. Big old point guard who doesn't really take deep shots. I gotta say, wow. Like you got some hate from some people on Twitter about it, and you know, listen, what can you say about that? But explain your tweet, what you meant by it.
Yeah, I don't think I can go to Pennsylvania because I've alienated both fan bases. Sixers fans are mad at me, and Steelers fans. I meant it as a compliment. Look, Ben himself has said his deep ball is a little bit off, but he is point guarding this offense. They've been efficient. They're spreading the ball out. They have a tremendous horizontal element. They're getting it to all of their playmakers in space. If it's working, it's fine. It doesn't have to be, you know, he doesn't have to be Steph Curry. It's okay if he's Ben Simmons. He's an efficient distributor.
So basically what you're saying is Ben can't shoot. So he can't throw.
Which Ben?
He can't throw.
Mina.
Man, the Ben Simmons disrespect.
I know that you're trying to clarify this, and I get it. I understand. Ben Simmons won't even shoot the ball.
This we're not going to play him shooting, are we?
A good comparison for the Ben Roethlisberger. He's throwing the ball a little bit downfield. Ben won't even shoot the basketball.
Hey,
so. Rightfully so, Mina Khan.
He's one of the best players in the NBA.
Y'all get it, I'm mentioning.
We couldn't even find any video of Ben Simmons shooting for that VO there.
I have two questions, Mina. Do you think he shoots with the wrong hand? Like some people think.
Oh, Lord.
Do you think Ben Roethlisberger should have been thrown as a lefty? Is that what you're trying?
Listen.
You know, it's the number one way to disrespect a quarterback. Tell them their arm sucks.
Hey, I know between you guys, I'm amongst the best basketball players at ESPN. But
good point. Exactly. We got a couple hoopers here. We only give Mina a hard time because she's always right. Okay. We'll see you tomorrow on NFL Live.